Christchurch, New Malden, Sunday, the 2nd of August, 2026. 11 o'clock service. James Cayley speaking on Why I Am a Christian.
Well, it is a great privilege to stand before you all here and to tell you why I am a Christian. The Son of God loved me and gave himself for me. And we love him because he first loved us. I love the Lord Jesus Christ because he first loved me and gave himself for me when he died on Calvary's tree. Now, going back to when I was in the junior school as a young boy, we often said this prayer in assembly. O most merciful Redeemer, friend and brother, may we see thee more clearly, love thee more dearly, and follow thee more nearly. Although I am a native of the Isle of Man, I have been living here with Rebecca and Steve and four of my grandchildren for the last 2 years. Because about 2 years ago, I seemed to get myeloma. I was diagnosed with myeloma, if you know what that is. It's sort of some kind of cancer in the bones. But and then also I was being treated for a heart condition as well. I seem to, according to the doctor, I seem to be responding quite well to the treatment as far as the myeloma is concerned. The heart thing is something that slows me down quite a bit, because I was always a very active person doing farming and gardening and things like that. And it's been quite frustrating for me these last 2 years, because if I went to do anything much, I would feel very exhausted quite soon. The Isle of Man is out there in the Irish Sea, about 18 miles from Scotland and 30 miles from Cumbria and 30 miles from Ireland. Used to be if we saw Ireland, the mountains of Mourne in Ireland, that was a sign that it was going to rain. But as far as Scotland was concerned, it was quite near, so we were able to see that quite regularly, the Mull of Galloway and along the southern coast of Scotland. All can be seen from Snae Fell, the highest mountain, which is 2,036 feet. And it has a railway going up there, so it's a great... anybody who finds it difficult to climb up a mountain can go up there quite easily. And there's a restaurant and all at the top. But on a clear day, you can see all of these countries from there. Now, the Isle of Man has 17 parishes, and once a year they have what is called the Parish Walk, and it's at the end of June in the longest days of the year, and it's 85 miles long, so it's quite a length of walk, really, and it zigzags all over the island so that they can knock on the door of each of the parish churches. So, as I said before, they have about 1,500 people who may start off on this walk, but nowhere near that amount actually finish it. But the people who do finish it do it in about, the leaders can do it in about 14 hours, but they have to be really going to do it in that time. They get 24 hours to do it in, to actually accomplish it in. And then we also get Tynwald, which is a great occasion in the Isle of Man. It goes back to the time of the Vikings, when the Vikings established this government in the Isle of Man 1,000 years ago. We celebrated the millennium of it in 1979. There was quite a celebration then, and the King of Norway came and all. But on Tynwald Day, on the 5th of July, all the leading people of the island get up on that mound under the tent there, and which is made up apparently of soil from all the parishes of the island, and which starts off with a church service first, which seemed to be mainly in Manx from when I followed it on the radio this year. But so they read the laws there in Manx, the new laws that they've had for the year to come, and they read them in Manx and in English as well. So that is Tynwald Day. So anyway, I need to tell a bit about my father and mother, because they had quite an influence in my life. That's their wedding day there, going back to 1946. So I need to tell a bit about them, because my dad and mother had a great influence on me becoming a believer as well. My father worked on farms all his life till he was about 37 years old, and only receiving £38 a year and living in on the farms. So you can imagine, with that salary, he wasn't able to save much money up to do anything much. So, and my mother, she was a nurse, an SRNSCM. She was a midwife, and she worked some of the time, although my parents, by the way, are both Manx as well. Now, a Manx thing goes back a few generations, I think. And she did work part of the time in England and part of the time in the Isle of Man. And on one of the occasions when she was in the Isle of Man, she met my dad's sister, who said to her, "I have got a brother who is religious like you." And so there was it was arranged that they meet, and in 6 months they were married. And I was born on May the 20th, 1947. And then between then and July 1959, they went on to have two daughters and three more sons. Now, while my dad was working on a farm called the Cronk, and that in Manx means hill, he saw that the Upper Cronk, which was another little farm just across the field, was available to rent. And so he began the years of his farming for himself. Now, farming was very different in those days to now. We had no electric to start with till I was about 7 years old. We knew what it was to live without electricity and be carrying lamps and lanterns about wherever we went. Then about that time, the owner, the reason he had put electricity in was because he had this idea of wanting to sell the place. So it came up for sale, and my dad had a big decision to make he would have to leave the place, or where to find £2,760, which was still a lot at that time. And so people were very good, and he managed to get the mortgages necessary to buy not only that, but some extra fields that we bought as well. And with God's help, because of the rise of the produce rose gradually, and we were able to pay off these mortgages. Now, to turn to the spiritual side of things, the Isle of Man is made up largely of Anglican and Methodist, really. And John Wesley, he came to the Isle of Man over 200 years ago. They had a celebration some years ago to celebrate that, and I went to some of those celebrations as well. There must have been an amazing revival in those days after Wesley came, because it must have been really quite amazing, because you can see from the number of little chapels that were built all over the island, and sometimes there were more, that maybe two or three in a parish. Because in those days, of course, people could only walk to these places, so that's why they had them like that, I suppose, within walking distance. then about 100 years after Some people thought that the church is becoming too worldly. And so this is where this primitive Methodist split came from, really. There was the primitive Methodist. So there was like two lots for a while. They even sometimes had two chapels there in each parish, with one primitive and one Wesleyan. But I can't remember it seeing it in my time. I think it's fizzled out quite some time back, and they were just all together as one again. In my dad's time, nearly all people went to church or chapel. Church meaning Church of England, and chapel was the word used for the Methodist. And it was rather funny that, because my uncle used to come from Belfast, and apparently in Belfast, and a chapel was a Roman Catholic church. They called it chapel. So he would say, when we said we're going to chapel, he thought we're going to the Catholic church. But that was because that was the way it was there. But chapel was the Methodist, the exact opposite to today. A lot of people were members of both churches. They were baptized and confirmed in the Church of England, but they were also Methodists as well. That was the way it seemed to be. In those days also, an evangelist would visit the chapels, and he would challenge the people about committing themselves to the Lord in earnest. One such came to the local chapel in Bride, and our dad was greatly moved. And this was when he was about 20 years old. When he got back to the farmhouse where he lived, he kneeled down by his bed and opened his heart and received Jesus as his own personal Saviour and Lord, a commitment he firmly stuck to all his life. And he also, as a young man, did some local preaching too. And then there were four little meetings of Plymouth Brethren on the island, and my dad got involved in one of these. These were open brethren, but there was also one of them was called exclusive brethren. My mum was brought up in one, but some had separated and formed what they called the Churches of God all over Britain. It was like a movement that they had in different places all over Britain. And my mum and her brother joined one of these because they said they found much love there, which they didn't find in the other meeting, where there was quite a bit of conflict, it seems. I was brought up in this meeting because my dad had to join it in order to marry. That was the rule that they had. But he felt quite somewhat restricted in this. But all the same, he did it so that we could be all together. I witnessed the Lord's Supper in the way they did it, simply, and I was impressed, but I was not allowed to take part because I was not baptized, because these only practiced adult baptism, whereas the exclusive brethren, they actually practiced household baptism, and their children were all baptized and breaking bread from as early as possible. I was only baptized at 14 years of age. Now, when I was about 11 years old, because of the growth of our family and the farm as well, because even on a Sunday, you couldn't just easily leave the farm behind, and you had to go 25 miles to where this meeting was in Douglas. And so you had to leave the farm behind for the rest of the day. It's a bit difficult. So they decided to go to this mission-type church, which was in those days known as the Seamen's Bethel. It was a mission to seamen, actually. But because that sort of need had died down, they decided that they would form it into an evangelical church, it's like an independent evangelical church. And then they managed to get a site there, and they built this new building there, which you can see the Bethel. And so that was the opening day that when we were gathered there like that, in about 1972, I think it was. And so it still continues with a reasonable number. We kind of count it as our base church in a way, although we've been going to the Methodist and the Anglican churches as well. When we moved to our bigger farmhouse, we met an 80-year-old lady neighbour who attended the local Bride Church. She gave me an old prayer book. And because of the influence of a local family, my sister and I attended their Sunday school at 2:30 in the afternoon. In those days, the church was well attended, 11 a.m., 6:30 p.m., and not like now. It would be very disappointing to see what it's like now. There's only a handful of people barely able to keep it going. And it seems like the elderly people, when they pass on, there's no young people taking up their position at all, and it's very disappointing. I began studying the prayer book, and I was still only sometime between 10 and 13 years of age at this time, and everything in it from cover to cover, the 39 articles, the creeds, etc., and also I attended some of the services, like morning prayer and evening prayer, and we would be singing the Venite, Exultamus Domino, and the Te Deum, Magnificat, Nunc Dimittis, and the Psalms. All was from the 1662 prayer book and the King James Version, which I liked it, even though it was the old language, I still liked it like that. And even now, when they do it occasionally, I like it like that. Only in the 1970s did things begin to change and modernize things, but it didn't seem to have the desired effect, as far as I could see, to increase the numbers going to church in any way. A terrible thing happened when I was about 10 years old. Our dad got a very bad dose of pneumonia and was near to death's door. The doctor said he had to go to hospital immediately, and the neighbours round about were the other farmers on the road. They were all very good. And the reason I'm telling this is because it had a good, quite an effect on me too, to see the Christian spirit that they showed, to all get together and help to keep us going. And it was right in the middle of harvest time as well. So there was quite a lot to do it with in the old way, the way the harvest was done in those days, not with combine harvesters, but with it more in the old way. And there was a lot of work involved. Now, when I was about 13 years old, the rector asked me to do the reading in the 2:30 festival service, which was something that happened once a year on the first Sunday of August. The first Sunday of August, 1960. So I was asked to read Genesis chapter 28, verses 10 to 18. And that is this part that tells about Jacob, how he went out from Beersheba and went towards Haran and lighted upon a certain place and tarried there because the sun was set. And then he had this vision while he slept of the angels of God ascending and descending. That was that passage. And I had to read it so many times that it's become something that I can almost repeat word for word. But the rector, he sat in different places in the church to listen to me, and it paid off because many praised me on that day, including the captain of the parish, who was an important man there, and he had praised me too. So now 2 days later, after that happened, I sailed to Belfast to stay a week with my uncle and aunt. It is funny when I think of it now, because all the children nowadays are so taken up with all these little electric appliances, these games they play and everything like that. They're taken up with all these things. And what I spent my time doing when I was there was reading the Apocrypha. And the funny thing is that you might think, well, how did I become aware that there was such a thing as an Apocrypha? Because it wasn't in our Bible that we used at home. But I had seen that in the church Bible, right in the center between the Old and New Testament, was this book called the Apocrypha. this collection of books called the Apocrypha, and also you read about it in the prayer book as well, of course. So I wanted to see what was in it, so I read the whole thing. Now, to move on then quite a few years when I was about 23 or 24, then we just happened to be attending this weekly gathering that there was in the Bride West. It was called the Bride Wesley Guild, It was partly devotional, like one week it would be devotional and another week it would be literary and another week it would be something else. It was divided up like that. But it was something that went on in the winter between October and, say, March or something. And there were other groups as well in different parts who had these. So we would visit them sometimes. And they would give us supper, and they would come and visit us, and entertain us, and then we would give them supper, and it went on like that. So I was in the bathroom, and I heard somebody wants to speak to you, and I opened the window, and this Mr. Howland said, "We want you to come and speak to us." And I said, "Well, what about?" And he said in his Manx accent, "Oh, just come and give us a good talking to." The Methodist minister happened to be present on there, and on the basis of that talk, he asked me to lead some services on their plan, because there were many chapels and hard to fill all the places. So I agreed that I would do that, one or two a quarter, or maybe even, there might have been even more. This went on for about 12 years, so I got to know all the Methodists on the north of the island. And unfortunately, many of these chapels have now been converted to houses because, there were just too many of them to maintain, really. On one occasion, I had people laughing when the guild visited a similar group in another parish. Round about that time, I had bought a Jerusalem Bible, which came out sometime in the 1960s, I think. So I had bought this, and of course, being a Catholic Bible, it had what they call the deuterocanonical books in it, or these apocryphal books. And the book of Ecclesiasticus was one of the books, so I chose to speak on chapters 38 and 39, a section in chapter 38 and a section in chapter 39, where a comparison is made between those who work hard with their hands and those scholars who are taken up just endlessly in studying. Now, just about that time, my father had gone on a round-the-world trip, and he had never travelled abroad before, except maybe to Switzerland, because my brother had married a Swiss girl and he lived in Switzerland, and he was actually a Methodist minister in Switzerland. He went to Canada first to visit his nephew, and then over the Pacific to Western Australia to visit people east and west. And in those passages, there's a mention made of traveling to foreign countries, which made the people laugh, because I was trying to make my father, my dad, fit into these sections, because I saw in him like that he was a bit of both. He wasn't just the one, but a bit from both of the passages. And so it was like this: how can he get wisdom that holdeth the plough? Because my dad, you see, he in the old way, he had to follow a horse with a plough like that, ploughing in the field, and they only did one furrow at a time, and they could go all day from early morning till late at night and only plough one acre. It's very different to today, because these big tractors now are competing with how many acres they can plough in an hour. Not like that. So it was very tiresome in those days for somebody who did that work. They would probably not have any strength in them to go and do studies in the evening as well as that. So these people, it says in that passage, they would spend their time like that, and in the evenings they would be fattening heifers and talking about cattle and things like that. So they're completely taken up with that. In fact, it's rather funny because I remember a man saying one time that, if you can't talk about farming, there's nothing else to talk about. It seemed like that was all they could actually think about. But it was different for my dad because, it goes on to say in the next passage, it is otherwise for the man who devotes his soul to reflecting on the law of the Most High. So he was able to do that as well, because he was able to actually memorize quite large portions of Scripture. And so he was a bit of both of these passages, really. It goes on to say that he researches into the wisdom of the ancients, occupies his time with prophecies. He is at home with the niceties of parables. He researches into the hidden sense of proverbs, and he ponders the obscurities of parables. At dawn and with all his heart, he resorts to the Lord who made him. And that's where this comes in then. He travels to foreign countries. He has experienced human good and human evil. He pleads in the presence of the Most High and opens his mouth in prayer. Many will praise his understanding and it will never be forgotten. And that is quite a big thing, because the rector who was in the parish at that time, he was involved in my father's funeral, and he actually said to me, "Your father is the most Christian man I have ever met." And I was quite impressed by that, because I thought, well, he's met quite a lot of people and quite a lot of religious people as well in his time. But he was able to say that about my father, so it was quite a testimony, really. Just to turn back to the two readings about love. The first reading I chose, because it talks about the great love of God has for you and for me. In the second reading, I try to make sure that I examine myself, that I am not losing my love for the Lord. It talks in that passage in Revelation about those who lose their first love for the Lord. So I'm concerned about that my love is not getting less, but it is growing each day. It's because of his great love for me why I have such great love for him and want to follow him all the days of my life. So I quote this hymn. This is like a Good Friday hymn. Oh, dearly, dearly has he loved, and we must love him too, and trust in his redeeming blood, and try his works to do. In conclusion, it is a great privilege and blessing to be a Christian. And I finish with a verse of one of Charles Wesley's hymns. Oh, that the world might taste and see the riches of his grace, the arms of love that compass me would all mankind embrace.